Okay, so we are holding on Chof Tes Amud Aleph, third line. We have in the Mishnah Machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva about a piece of cloth that you folded or twisted, whatever, to make a whip, but you didn't yet singe it to make it easier to light. So we had a Machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Number one, is it Makabel Tumah? Rabbi Eliezer says it's still Makabel Tumah. Rabbi Akiva says it not. And number two, are you allowed to use it for a Shabbos candle? Rabbi Eliezer says no. Rabbi Akiva says yes. So we started discussing why should that be. We can understand, we said as far as Tumah, fine, it seems to be easy enough to understand. Rabbi Eliezer holds that once you, that even though you twisted it, it's still considered a baguette, therefore it's still Makabel Tumah. Just recapping what we learned in the Mishnah. We're holding on Chof Tes Amud Aleph, third line.
Okay,
so in the Mishnah, again, we had that Rabbi Eliezer would say that even though you twisted it to make a wick, it's still considered a beged, because after all you can do, it's very easy to untwist it. Therefore, it's still Makabel Tumah. Rabbi Akiva, meanwhile, will hold that not. Once you twisted it, Rabbi Akiva says that it's not Makabel Tumah anymore. But we were trying to discuss why would they be arguing whether you can use it to light for Shabbos or not. So far we mentioned one explanation, which is from Rabbi Ada Bar Ava and also from Rabbi Lozer, that we're talking about a piece of cloth which is exactly 3x3 etzbos. We said we're not talking about just any Erev Shabbos, we're talking about Erev Shabbos which happens to be on Yom Tov. And the reason why you're not allowed to is because while it was still considered a piece of cloth, then beforehand it was a keli because it was exactly 3x3 tefachim. Now you're going to be lighting with it. So now it's going to be a broken keli because now it's less than 3x3. When you're lighting it, you're supposed to continue lighting it until most of it is lit. So therefore, that involves handling and using muktzah. So the question is it considered muktzah? Rabbi Yehuda, you say that Rabbi Yehuda holds that noilad is considered muktzah, So according to him, then it would be muktzah. The question is, therefore, did the folding of it, this that you twisted it to make a wick, did that make, which of necessity you had to do that before Yom Tov, because you're not allowed to twist wicks on Yom Tov, did that make it no longer a keli? Rabbi Eliezer would say that no, therefore on Yom Tov itself, it's still considered a keli when you start lighting it. Then you started lighting it and you made it no longer a keli, because now you're burning part of it. Therefore it would be muktzah, therefore it would be osur. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would hold that no, when you twisted it into a wick on Erev Yom Tov, so already at that point, on Erev Yom Tov is no longer a keli, and therefore on Yom Tov itself, you have no problem with lighting it.
Why can't you say a wick is a keli? How come
it's... Because the wick itself is not large enough to be a keli. It's a piece of cloth, or a piece of something that was made into a wick. It's not big enough to be considered a keli. It doesn't have a function of its own other than to light with it, that it should be considered a keli, such that before it was a keli, and now it's going to be considered a shever keli, a broken keli. The same purpose that it had before, which was you were going to use it to light a candle, to light a lamp, it has that same purpose now, after it's been singed. So if it had been singed before Yom Tov, So now it's not a keli anymore. Now remember, it started out as exactly 3x3 etzbos, according to Rabbi Ada Bar Ava's explanation. Then you would say, okay, well then in that case, then there's nothing to talk about. It was a shever keli before Yom Tov. It was a broken keli, so no problem. Then lighting with it on Yom Tov. The problem comes in because you didn't singe it before Yom Tov. So only now is it becoming a shever. So that's the question. Is it only now becoming a shever keli? Then that's no good. Or is it that it was already not considered a keli before Yom Tov because twisting it into a wick, says Rabbi Akiva, would make it that it was no longer a keli? Then you're good. Okay, so that was all one answer. We mentioned in that connection that Rabbi Ava himself does not agree with that whole concept at all. He holds rather like Rabbi Shimon that he holds rather like Reb Shimon, which we can discuss shortly in the Gemara, that Nolad is Mutter, but we're saying he's explaining the Mishnah following Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Okay, let's start over here. Rabba Omar, so Rabba says, third line of Chafetz Amar Aleph, Hainu Taima de Rabbi Yezer. There's a different reason why Rabbi Yezer says that you're not allowed to light with it on Shabbos. Nothing to do with Tumah V'Tahara. Because Rabbi Yezer says in general, you're not allowed to light Shabbos candles with a wick that has not previously been singed, because then it doesn't light that easily. Then it doesn't light and it doesn't burn that well. And we've been learning throughout the parak that the whole point is you need to have Shabbos candles burn well in order that you don't come to tilt them or to make them burn better or whatever. So therefore, so he says that in general, you're not allowed to light with a wick that was not previously singed. You're also, according to him, not allowed to use, for example, rags that were not previously singed. In fact, Tosfos actually brings a girsa. Tosfos asks, if you're not even allowed to with a wick, then certainly not with a rag, which is less easy to light. The Tosfos actually brings a girsa that Rabbi Eliezer says you can't light with rags at all. On the other hand, there's a different explanation that maybe actually rags do catch fire more easily. Depends on the rag, I guess. But sometimes, at least, do catch fire more easily than regular wicks. Therefore, you might have thought that it would be allowed, and therefore he has to specify that as well. Whatever the case, so he says. So that's the reason why he says that not. Whereas Rabbi Akiva would disagree and say there's no problem with lighting with a wick that wasn't previously singed. You're allowed to. So Rabbi Akiva would say. By the way, Tosfos points out, if we follow that explanation of the Mishnah, then it means that given that the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, in general, there's very few places in Shas. We learned in Nida that there's only like three or four places, there's only like four places, I think, where the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer in general. So therefore, that would mean you don't have to singe the wicks before Shabbos. So Tosfos says this that people have the minhag to do that is really not necessary. Nevertheless, that is the minhag, and that is it's actually brought in Shulchan Aruch as the correct thing to do. That, in fact, it's usually in most households where the wife lights Shabbos candles, it's usually the husband's contribution to lighting Shabbos candles is, besides that he sets them up, is also that he pre-lights them and then puts them out, and that way later on they're easier for his wife to light. So the question is, if we're going to understand the Mishnah that way, that according to Rava, the fact that Rabbi Eliezer says you're not allowed to use this for a Shabbos candle, and Rabbi Akiva says that you are, in that case, according to him, it has nothing to do with the halacha of Tumah V'Tahara. In other words, that according to Rava, the two machlokas in our Mishnah, one whether it's makabel Tumah or not, and one whether you're allowed to light Shabbos candles with it, or actually according to Rava, we're not even getting yet really into the Tumah V'Tahara thing. The Tumah V'Tahara thing, actually, we're going to have later on. We're going to have a different explanation that the Gemara is going to give why they're arguing about it. But if we're talking in terms of lighting it for Shabbos candles, that the reason is just Rabbi Eliezer is not allowing it because it wasn't singed. Well, Ella, we learned yesterday, and Ella had a ton of Yosef. We learned that Yosef, when he was younger, had learned a braisa, Gimel of Gimel Mitzumtzamos. Rabbi Yosef had learned a braisa that mentioned a case where you have a piece of cloth exactly 3 by 3 etbos. And when we said, with the first explanation of Rabbi Adababa, we said, Rabbi Yosef says, oh, now I understand what that braisa was talking about. Evidently, that braisa was meant to explain our Mishnah, that the machlokas in our Mishnah is about a piece exactly that size. Because again, if it was larger than that, then you wouldn't have the machlokas, because if it's larger than that, it still remains a keli even when you're singeing it, even when you're starting to light with it. And once it was, and once you're finished with that, then it's fine. You're allowed to continue having hanah from it, you're allowed to continue having hanah from it at that point. So there wouldn't be any issue with it if it was larger than 3 by 3. So if we say Rav Ada Bar Abba's explanation of the Mishnah, then we understand what the Braisa is coming to tell us, that that's exactly the case. But if you're going to use Rava's explanation, that the case in the Mishnah has nothing to do with it being exactly 3 by 3, it has to do with whether it was previously singed or not. So what is the Braisa for? What is that Braisa about Sholosh al Sholosh, about Sholosh Gimel al Gimel with some Thomas, where it mentions exactly 3 by 3 etzbois? What is the relevance of that Braisa? The answer is written in Tumah. The answer is that Braisa is not, in according to that, then that, if we take that understanding of it, then our Braisa, the Braisa that we have quoted, wouldn't have anything to do specifically with our Mishnah. It would be in general to explain a din in Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara. Tznan. Namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, Gimel al Gimel Sha'amru, when we say that a piece of cloth 3x3 etzvos is Makabel Truma, as we talked about the other day with wool and linen specifically, that would be Chutz Min HaMelo. That would be besides for the border. Namely, Rashi explains like this. When you have a piece of cloth, the ends of a piece of cloth, the weave, the shefty, the erev, can very easily come undone. So if you have a piece of cloth 3x3 etzvos, if you try to use it as a patch, and we learned the other day, the reason why it's Makabel Truma, when it's only 3x3 etzvos, is because poor people will use it as a patch. But if you try to use it as a patch without first folding over the edge and sewing it, it's going to come apart anyway. The fabric is going to come apart. So therefore, the Tanakhama there says, Dibur Reb Shimon. So Reb Shimon says that the 3x3 is Chutz Min HaMelo, is besides for the border, which you have to fold over and sew. So in other words, you look at any regular piece of cloth, you look at, for example, the clothing you're wearing, you'll find that generally speaking, you have that. There's a little bit around, there's a little bit at the edge, which is folded over, where you'd otherwise have the loose end of the cloth with loose threads hanging off, and it's folded over and sewn. And that way it doesn't come unwoven. So Shimon says the same thing. When you're measuring the 3x3, it actually has to be a little more than 3x3. So you have to allow space for that folding over the edge and sewing. The Chacham say, no, 3x3 exactly is Makabel Truma. So therefore, so the Braisa that Rabbi Yosef is quoting is saying, when it says 3x3 Mitzvah Thomas, not like we thought, which was according to Rav Adar Bar Ava's explanation, it would mean that it has to be no more and no less than 3x3, because if it was less than 3x3, it wouldn't be Makabel Truma in the first place, and if it was more than 3x3, then according to Rav Adar Bar Ava's explanation, the Din of Our Mishnah wouldn't apply, because again, by the time you finished singeing it and making it into a usable wick, it would still be 3x3, and it still wouldn't be a broken keli yet. So according to that understanding, the Braisa meant when it said 3x3 and some summers meant exactly 3x3, no more, no less. According to our understanding now, according to Rava's explanation, we don't need to say that. The Braisa is just saying, you should know, the minimum size of the Makabel Truma is exactly 3x3 etzvos without taking any extra for folding it over into consideration. But obviously it would be Makabel Truma if it's larger than that also. But according to that, the Braisa doesn't need to say that. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to digress a little bit, and we're going to talk about, we mentioned this machlokes of Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon about noilad, about if you have something that is newly created or gained a new status on Yom Tov. So for example, the case, for example, the Rick of our Mishnah, according to Rav Adar Bar Ava, which previously was a keli, according to Eliezer, was a keli, and now as soon as you start lighting it, it's no longer a keli, because no longer 3x3 etzvos. Or an example that we had yesterday in the Gemara, the other way around, you had, let's say, a block of wood, which a goy on Yom Tov went and carved out and to make something out of it. Or you're allowed to use it for firewood on Yom Tov. So we said Rabbi Yehuda would hold that not, because he holds that Nolad is Osir. Rav Shimon would hold it's fine because he holds Nolad on Yom Tov is Mutter. So now let's talk about a couple of related machlokes in to that concept. Amr Rav Yehuda Amr Rav. Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav like this. Machlokes number one. Masikin bekelim on Yom Tov you would be allowed to use for firewood. You would be allowed to use an actual kelim. So you have, let's say, for example, you have, let's say, a wooden cup or a wooden table or whatever. Let's say you don't have any other firewood. So according to Rav Yehuda, you would be allowed to use it for firewood on Yom Tov. Fine, because it's a keli and it's not mukta. But the ein masikin b'shivrei kelim. But like we said before, Rav Yehuda would say, you're not allowed to light, you're not allowed to make a fire on Yom Tov. You're not allowed to use as firewood. Use broken kelim, meaning kelim that broke on Yom Tov because of noilad. Because again, before they were usable as a keli. Now they're no longer usable as a keli. Now they're only useful as firewood. That's noilad. And Rav Yehuda wouldn't allow that. A second, Rav Shimon Mati, where Rav Shimon would say it's Mutter because he doesn't hold that Nolad is also. As we discussed yesterday, that the actual final halacha is that on Shabbos we hold like Rav Shimon, and on Yom Tov we hold like Rav Yehuda. So on Yom Tov, Nolad is also. On Shabbos in general, it's not. Okay. That's Machlokas number one. Machlokas number two, Masikin B'tmarim, you're allowed to use for firewood on Yom Tov, you would be allowed to use dates.
It's not very very logical to say on one day it's Nirlad exists and on another day Nirlad does not exist. How do you reconcile those concepts?
We reconcile it because we say on Shabbos the Chachamim wanted us to be machmir because otherwise we're going to treat on Yom Tov. I mean, the Chachamim wanted us to be machmir in at least one aspect of the dinim of Yom Tov in order that we don't get careless with Yom Tov and think, look, we're allowed to do other malachas, so therefore we're allowed to do whatever we want. In order to avoid that possibility, the Chachamim imposed one thing on Yom Tov, which is more stringent than Shabbos. And that is the concept of Nolan.
Yeah, I understand why they did it. What I just don't get it is how you can say Nolad is Asur one day and Elad the other day. It's as if Nolad...
Why not? Because you can say, why not? Rabbi Yehuda would say it's Asur all the time. Rabbi Shimon holds it's Mutar all the time. So on Shabbos we pass in like one, and on Yom Tov we pass in like the other. What's the problem?
Well, that's the logic part of it.
There's no logical issue with it. We're allowed to pass in. We're allowed to pass in like a certain tana in one case, and like a different tana in another case. We have such things many times in halacha where we pass in differently depending on different circumstances. Okay,
no, we pass in differently, but on the same thing for two different days.
Yeah. Okay, but this is how it is. Anyway, let's go on. So again, machlokas number one then is about whether you can use broken kalim for firewood on Yom Tov. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Rabbi Shimon says yes. Machlokas number two, masikin b'tzmarim. You're allowed to use dates for firewood on Yom Tov. The actual dates themselves, you would be allowed to use. Again, let's say you don't have anything else to use, because otherwise, of course, you have an issue about Pashlis, but we're not getting into that. The ein mas but ochlon, but if you ate the dates, ein masikin b'gaunehen, divrei Rabbi Yehuda, then Rabbi Yehuda would say you're not allowed to, at that point, use the pit that are left over from the dates for firewood, because again, the pits would be considered noivad, because before they were considered part of the dates in effect, and now they're not. So Rabbi Yehuda would say that's noivad, and you can't use it. But Rabbi Shimon Matir, again, Rabbi Shimon would say it's mutter because he doesn't have a problem with noivad. The third case is masikin be'egozim. You're allowed to use for firewood on Yom Tov, you're allowed to use nuts. Ochlon, but if you ate the nuts, ate my chicken bekupe sehen, then on Yom Tov you're not allowed to use the shells that are left over for firewood. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon Matir, and again Rabbi Shimon would say it's mutter. Now, why do we need the same thing mentioned in three different cases? The Gemara says it's tzricha. We need all three cases to understand that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would argue on all three of them. Because if we only had the first machlokes about kalim, then you would say bahi kama Rabbi Yehuda. You know why Rabbi Yehuda says it's also because it really has a completely different status. Because originally it was a keli, it was usable for some purpose, as a table, as a chair, as a cup, or whatever. Now it's only a broken keli, so now it's really considered noilad, and therefore there would be much more reason to say that's author. But you could argue in the case of the date, if we weren't told that they also argue about the date. After all, the pits themselves don't have any different status. The pits are the same as now when you ate the dates and you remove the pits. The pits are exactly the same as they were yesterday. It's not like the broken keli where the piece is now looks different than it did before, because before it was a complete keli and now it's a broken piece. The pits look exactly the same as they did before. A mashaper dummy. So you would think it's fine to use the pits. Maybe even Rabbi Yehuda would allow you to use the pits. The Iyashmin and Garinin. On the other hand, then if we only told us the case involving the date pit, you would say, Habamina, you would say, okay, but you know what the difference is? Okay, but there is a difference because, after all, before, fine, the pits themselves are not any different in shape or anything or in appearance, but after all, before they were inside the fruit, and now they're outside, now the fruit was eaten, so now you can see them. Therefore, you could say that maybe that's enough of a difference to be considered noilad. But when it comes to nutshells, they were uncovered before and they're still uncovered now, because after all, they're on the outside of the they're on the outside of the nut. So therefore there's more reason to therefore there's less reason to call it noilad. A mashaker dummy. You would argue maybe that that's fine. Therefore it's tzricha, therefore we need that machlokas, and therefore, okay, so it could have mentioned the one involving the nuts, and we would have understood the other one, but fine, it's a common thing to do things in the order, not only this, but even that. Loizu achzu. So first he starts with the one which is the lesser chidush, sort of, because you have the keli is clearly different than it was before, because before it was a whole one and now it's broken. Then not only that, but even in the case of the dates, where the pips are no different than they were before, even then Rabbi Yehuda would after it. And even in the case of the nuts, where not only they're not different, but they're still just as exposed as they were before, because before they were on the outside of the nut also, even then Rabbi Yehuda would still after it. So in all three cases, he would consider them nolad. Now, what you do actually have is, when you get down to it, I mean, in what way is it nolad? I mean, on the face of it, you knew before Yom Tov, when you're going to eat the date, you're not going to eat the pit. When you eat the nut, you're not going to eat the shell. Tosfos discusses over here, and various other posts can discuss on the basis of it. The difference is that the pit of the date or the shell of the nut is considered a shomer. You have a concept, we learned about it in Cholid, and we've learned about it sporadically here and there since then, that you have a case, you have certain kinds of things, you have, for example, nutshells or other things like that, which are considered a shomer. They're considered, they protect the fruit, they keep it fresh, they keep it from getting dirty, whatever it is. And therefore they're considered part of the food, for example, as far as the halacha of Tumah V'Tahara. So these things also, the nutshells or the date pit, would be considered a shomer, and they're considered therefore part of the food. So the fact that you had in mind before Yom Tov that you're not going to eat them, that you're going to use them for firewood, doesn't help, because they're still considered bottle to the food. Okay. Fine. So the Gemara points out. Now this, we started by quoting this from Rab. This whole concept that we said that you're not allowed to use for firewood, you're not allowed to use broken kalim or nutshells or date picks or whatever. We quoted that. We said Rabbi Yehuda said that in the name of Rab. So the Gemara says v'hadi Rab lav v'feirush itmar. This that was saying, Rab did not say it explicitly. Elamik klala itmar. Rather, what it is we can deduce it from something that happened with Rab, where he would accept it as halacha, because the Rab ochel tamri, because one time on a weekday Rab was eating dates, the shadiach hashiyasa lebuchya, and as he was eating the dates, he was throwing the pits into the oven, into the stove. Rashi describes the buchya as a kind of stove made out of bricks. So he's throwing them in there that eventually, with the next time they need to light the stove, they can use these pits in there as part of the firewood. Amalei Rabchia, seeing Rav doing that, tells him, Bar Pachsi, son of great people. We learned at the beginning of the Masech that the word Pachas means a nobleman or something. So he called him that because he's descended from an important family, Malchus Beis David. Rabchia informs Rav, you should know, to do, if this is on a weekday, it's fine to do it. But if you were to do the same thing on Yom Tov, then it would be osur. So, therefore, if we assume that Rav accepted that as valid, and Rabchia, after all, was his uncle and his Rebbe, then that would mean that Rav holds that you can't use the date pits as firewood on Yom Tov. So that's the question. Kivlamine or loy kivlamine? The question is, did Rav in fact accept what Rabchia is saying and say then that means, okay, so in fact, now I know you're not allowed to on Yom Tov, and therefore later on he would have taught that as halacha, or loy kivlamine, or loy kivlamine. Maybe he didn't agree. Maybe he said, okay, you know what, you're talking according to the opinion that Nolad is also on Yom Tov. I personally hold that Nolad is mutter on Yom Tov, so therefore I wouldn't have a problem with it. So which is it? The answer is, Toshma, we can prove as follows. The key also Rav the Bavel, many, many years later, when Rav, when he was already old, returned to Bavel, as we've learned before, Rav was born and grew up originally in Bava, but then he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and for many years there was a Talmud of Rebbe over there and of Rakia. Later on, when he was older, he moved back to Bavel, and he opened the yeshiva of Surah over there. And we've talked about before, he accomplished major upgrades in Jewish life in Bavel, that now they learned much more Torah than they did before. They counted it to, you know, sort of like we have, like we think of the, you know, when the Friedrich Rebbe and later on the Rebbe came to America, we consider that the beginning of a new epoch in history. Like now, from then on, you know, American Jewry was completely different. That's how it was in Bavel. They thought of when Rav came back to Bavel, even though Bavel had yeshivas and Chacham before that, they still, for them, it was like the beginning of a new era. Anyway, so when Rav came to Bavel, Ochal Tamli, we know that one time he was eating dates, the Shodder Kashiyos the Lachevisa, and he was throwing the pit to animals to eat, and that was on Yom Tov. So my Rav Pausiyosa, now if it was Nola, that would be also to do, because he's not allowed to throw them to the animals, they'd be Mukta. So my Rav Pausiyosa, shouldn't we assume that the dates that he's eating over there are Persian dates? It's in Bavel. Bavel at that time was ruled over by Persia. So Mestama, that's the kind of dates they have. Now, Persian dates, Rashi explains, are very good quality. When you eat them, when you finish eating the flesh of the date, there's no flesh left still attached to the pit. Like this, when you have unripe fruit in general, when you eat unripe fruit, a lot of times, certain kinds of fruit, even after it's ripe, you have pieces of flesh still stick to the pit. But in the case of Persian dates, it's not like that. There's no flesh of the date left on the pit. Therefore, the pit is completely inedible. There's nothing you can do with it except use it for animal food or firewood or whatever. And we still see that Rav did that, so it sounds like Rav did not accept what Rav Chiya said. He would say, Rav Chiya, you're talking according to the opinion that Noilad is also, but I hold Noilad as Mutter. I hold like Rav Shimon even on Yom Tov. And therefore, he's doing that. So therefore, for like Kibla, that would show that he didn't accept what Rav Chiya said. The answer is, Igmar says, Lloyd, not necessarily, but I'm a Yasa. These might have been dates from Aram, which are, those are not such good quality. They don't become as completely ripe. When you finish eating the date, you still have a little bit of flesh stuck to the pit. So therefore, the pit is not mukta, because the pit still has edible food on it. Therefore, so therefore, the pit is still usable because you still have the mother, meaning the original fruit, still on it. You still have some of the fruit still attached to it. So therefore, it would not be mukta, even if we say that Noilad is mukta. So there's no proof from that story necessarily that Rav would hold that Noilad is mukta. Maybe indeed he agrees with Rav Chiya. Noilad is also on Yom Tov, but these pits, because they come from these Aramean dates, which we still have flush stuck to the pit at the end, then therefore they're not Noilad in the first place. The Aruch and Rabbeinu Hananel give a slightly different explanation. Persian dates are like the dates that we buy nowadays. The pits are very hard. You can't eat them. Aramean dates, the Tamri Amriyosa, the pits are softer, and you're actually able to eat them. Most of the time you wouldn't, because you wouldn't bother. You just eat the date, and you throw out the pit. But the pit is edible in those, and therefore, again, it can't be considered Noilad. It can't be considered Mukta, because in principle, if you wanted, you could have eaten the whole date, including the pit. That's the Aruch, that's Rabbeinu Hananel and the Aruch's explanation. Okay. Continuing on this topic, Amalei Rav Shmuel bar Bachana, usually in the Gemara we have Rav bar Bachana. He was Rav Shmuel bar Bachana. Maybe he was his brother. I don't know. Anyway, he asks Rav Yosef, "Lir Rav Yehuda, I gotta ask you." He says, "According to Rav Yehuda, the Amalei Masikin beKalim beEin Masikin beShivrei Kalim." He says, "Now what do we say? He said you're allowed to use Kalim for firewood, but not broken Kalim. But what happens?" Given to Avdik Bahupurta, as soon as you start lighting with them, as soon as the fire catches onto them, Havale Shivre Kalim. At that point, even if it was a complete Kali before, now it's not. Now it's a broken Kali. And the problem is, V'chi Kama Hapich, now what happens is when you're turning over the fire, you're poking at the fire to make it burn well and in order to cook the food well, V'isura Kama Hapich. Don't you have a problem that now you're handling Mukta? Because you're like this, if it was just that you're lighting it and then it just burns without you doing anything, then fine. The fact that it's mukta doesn't matter. You're allowed to have hanah from mukta. But if the fact of the matter is, when you have a fire, you generally speaking, you usually have to poke at it and move it around a bit in order to make it burn well and in order to cook the food well. So here you're going to have to do that. And therefore, it comes out that you're handling muktzah. So how does that work? In fact, actually, Rav Moshe actually says a verse on this. He has a whole section in a Sefer Dibros Moshe explaining things in our perek. He points out an interesting thing. So what are you going to say? Okay, so I won't poke at the fire. The problem is, if you don't poke at the fire, it's more likely to go out and not to cook your food. Then it comes out you didn't even do it for a purpose that you're allowed to on Yom Tov. The whole reason you're allowed to light a fire and poke at it on Yom Tov is in order to cook your food. If it turns out that it's not going to cook the food, then it comes out you did an issur in the first place by making the fire. So of necessity, you have to move it around. So how can you do that? According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're moving around muktzah. The answer is the oven could have chitzchid of muktzah. The answer is you can do in this case like what Rav Masna says in a different context. The Amr of Masna Amarav, Eitzim Shenoshu Min Adeka L'Tanu B'Yomdiv. Suppose you have an oven, and suppose that you now you're not allowed obviously to break branches off the tree on Yomdiv and use them for firewood. That would be a malacha of cutting on Yomdiv, breaking them off the tree on Yomdiv would be a malacha of kosher. But let's say, and for that matter, if wood falls off the tree on Yomdiv, it's mukta. But let's say they fell directly into the oven. Eitzim shenoshu min adeka l'tanu b'yomdiv. They fell directly from the tree right into the oven. Mar be'eitzim mochonin. What you can do is you add more wood that you had pre-designated before yomdiv, that you had pre-designated as firewood, or mastikin, and then you're allowed to burn the whole thing. So one explanation, Rashi explains over here, that's because then you're being mevatel b'roiv, the ones that fell into the oven. You're being mevatel then b'roiv. The Ritva says a little differently. It's not really a matter of bitul. It's more just a matter of now that you have a roiv of heser, it doesn't matter. The fact that you have a miyuk of iser and the iser still has its status in there, you're still allowed to light the whole thing. So you're fine. You're allowed to do such a thing on Yom Tov. So in the same thing over here, what you do is when you have this keli that you're talking about using it, you have this keli that you're talking about using for firewood on Yom Tov. What you do is you put the keli in there. You have other wood there as well. And by the way, you have an explanation. The Ram learns actually that it only works if you had wood in there previously. It doesn't work. The Ram says if you had no wood in there before, then it doesn't work because then you don't have anything to be mevatel with. But if you had wood in there beforehand, then you're allowed to add extra wood. It's not considered being mevatelit because the keli is still mutter. The keli is still mutter. So therefore, it's not that you're being mevatel on isur yet. The Alter Rebbe explains this based on Udyor Poskim. You're not being mevatel on isur because not also yet. It's a keli. It's still mutter. And in the case of the wood that fell in, it's not considered bitul because, well, it is sort of. But since it's only osim, it's rabbanon. And since you already had other wood there, then therefore the chachamim magani will allow you to add extra wood. So therefore it'll be allowed. So in the same thing, that's what we're talking about over here. What you have is you have a bunch of other firewood in there. You have this keli. Now, when you're moving it all around in order to make it burn well, so you're moving. So you have roiv of other wood which wasn't mukta in the first place. Therefore, you have no problem, and therefore you're allowed to stir it all and move it all around to make it burn well on your own. So all of that was sort of a digression. All of that was to explain what we were talking about before about the machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, about whether you're allowed to light on Yom Tov using broken kalim. And now we understand the details of their machlokes a little bit better. Okay, now let's get back to our Mishnah. So far we had one explanation, which was from Rabbi Ada Bar Ava, We started the Gemara by saying that the reason why Rabbi Eliezer would hold that the piece of cloth that you twisted to make a wick, why it's still makabel turma, is because he says just the fact that you twisted it doesn't change its status. Rabbi Akiva would hold that it does. Then we started getting into the question why you're not allowed to light with it on Shabbos. so far we had two explanations. One was of Abba's explanation, because it's talking about on Yom Tov, and as soon as you light it, you're going to make it exactly 3x3, and you're going to be making it into a broken keli, and Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's mukta, as we were just discussing. Rava gives a different reason that it has nothing to do with Yom Tov, it just has to do with that Rabbi Eliezer wants you to pre-light the wick before you actually light it for Shabbos in order that it'll burn well. Now we're going to give a different answer about the matter of Tumah V'Tahara. We sort of left the Tumah V'Tahara thing aside, and we just said that we just assumed that we were talking about, the question was whether folding it into a wick takes away its status of a beged or not. So now Rav Hamnuna is revisiting that point and saying, I have a different explanation of the matter of that we say that it's Makabal Tumah, or that Rabbi Eliezer says it's Makabal Tumah, and Rabbi Akiva says that not. Rav Hamnuna Omar, we're talking about over here. The situation is where this piece of cloth that you want to use as a wick is less than 3x3 tefachim. Now, we learned a few days ago that you have those certain kinds of materials which are able to be makabel tuma at 3x3 esbois. Specifically, we said wool and linen. And then we said that there are other materials, according to many tanoim, We said there were certain tanoim that maybe hold that not, that other materials are not makabel tuma at all, but we brought opinions of tanoim and amoraim that other types of material are makabel tuma, but only at the size 3x3 tefachim. So here we're talking about a piece of cloth of wool or of linen, practically speaking, it would have to be linen because we learned at the beginning of the parak, you can't use wool for wicks for Shabbos candles anyway, so we're talking about linen. So you would have a piece. It's bigger than 3x3 esbois, but it's less than 3x3 tefachim. So the question is it considered important enough to be makabel tuma? Umikule matloni, it's shonukam. We're actually talking about over here something that involves the case where a person has a scrap of cloth. Matloni means like a small scrap of cloth, which is kula, which is that he doesn't intend to use it for clothing or whatever. He intends to use it for some lesser purpose. So therefore, so in other words, Rashi explains so in terms of the halachas of Tumah V'Tahara, it wouldn't really matter whether he twisted it to make a wick or not. Just the fact that he designated it for a wick would be enough. It would be enough to say that the machlokas that we're going to discuss now is relevant to it.
Rashi says it's not important to him. He doesn't consider it very worth it.
Right. Matlonius akalus be'enav is the expression that Rashi uses. We're going to give examples now. We're going to quote from the Mishnah and Kalim that gives other examples. Let's say you have a piece of cloth that was designated. One example we're going to have over there, let's say, is to use as a potholder. So is it the makabel tuma when it's less than 3x3 tefachim or not?
So why does Rashi have to add another condition of worth of value to the person?
No. What it is like this. This that we're saying that it's kalis be'enav, the fact, that's what it is, kalis be'enav, that's what it means, kolei matlonius, meaning a piece of cloth, a scrap of cloth that a person is using for a lesser thing. He's not using it as a beged, he's using it for some lesser purpose. So, for example, a wick would be another one of those lesser purposes. So now the question is the thing the makabel tuma or not? Does it have to be 3x3? Is it that we say that when it's 3x3, it's bars, it's makabel tuma only, as we discussed the other day, only if you're using it as a beged, but if you're using it as something else and it needs to have a larger size to be makabel tuma, or maybe not. Maybe to be makabel tuma if you're using it for some lesser purpose. For example, for a wick, or for example, for a potholder or whatever, maybe it has to be 3x3 tefachim. So that's the thing. Rashi is pointing out that the fact that in our Mishnah we mentioned the case where he twisted it to make a wick out of it. The truth is, in terms of Rav Hamnuna's explanation, whether you twisted it or whether you didn't really doesn't make a difference. Because either way, the point is you designated it for some lesser purpose to use as a wick. The only reason, according to that, the Mishnah would mention about that you twisted it to make a wick is because the next thing we're mentioning is that you didn't yet singe it. If you singed it, then definitely it's no longer considered a beged. It's now considered a wick, and even Rabbi Eliezer would hold that's not makabel tuma anymore. But like this, when you only designated it for a wick, but you didn't actually do anything yet, or even if you twisted it, but you didn't actually do anything to make it any smaller, For example, by singing it, then Rabbi Eliezer as a whole is still going to be Makabel Tuma, even though it's less than 3x3 as far as, and Rabbi Akiva is going to disagree, as we're going to discuss now.
But you need both conditions, the fact that the 3x3 and the fact that it's not something that's worth much for you.
So what we're saying is like this. If it's 3x3 as voice and it's wool or linen, if you're using it as a beged, if you're using it as an actual beged, as an actual item of clothing, or as a patch for an item of clothing, then it's definitely makabel truma, no question about it. The only machloikas we had is we had earlier on the Amud, do you need to allow extra space around the edges of it for selvage to fold it over and sew it or not? The chacham say that not. So, but yeah, what we're talking about, yeah, and if it's more than 3x3 tefachim, then it doesn't matter what purpose you're using
right.
it for. If it's between a 3x3 esbois and 3x3 tefachim, that's where we're going to have the machlokas that we're going to learn about now. So the Gemara says, it's interesting, by the way, the Rif, I mentioned the other day, the Rif usually only deals in his sefer of halachas in the back of the Gemara, he usually only deals with things that are negeah halacha l'maisa nowadays. But here he spends a great deal of space explaining this sugya that we're talking about over here, and he mentions a couple of long explanations of it, that he says that, for example, there was one explanation that some people wanted to explain, that we say kochas mishloisha al shloisha means less than 3x3 at boys, and he says absolutely not, if it's less than 3x3 at boys, for sure it's not makabel truma. So he spends a lot of time on it, very uncharacteristically. One reason, I guess, might be, like we were talking about the other day, there is a certain naskimina of it nowadays, as far as the question, if a woman finds a tetem on a piece of cloth, it depends whether the cloth is makabel truma or not, to know whether she's actually tummy from the tetem or not. So that might be a reason why the rish did it. Or it could just be because, like this, he found various wrong explanations of it, so he wanted to take the time to explain it correctly, so that we understand it. Okay. Anyway. So machlokes is like this. It's not. So, but as the Rabbi Yezel, the time may, but I'm a table of time may. So in our Mishnah, when Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva are saying their respective opinions, they're each one going according to their respective shita that we find in a different context. Namely like this. Ditznan, we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim, Tochas mishloisha al shloisha, if you have a piece of cloth less than three by three tefachim, keep in mind, we have to remember like we did the other day, Shloisha al shloisha, which is masculine, refers to tefachim, where tefach is also masculine, as opposed to shalosh al shalosh, which is lashon nekeva, refers to esbois, where esba is lashon nekeva. Anyway, pochas mishloisha al shloisha. If you have a piece of cloth less than 3x3 tefachim, sheskino liskos bayat hamerchak, a person designated it, he's not planning to use it as an item of clothing. He's going to be using it as a plug for a bath, or he's going to use it as a pot holder to be able to lift up a hot pot. Or to wipe off millstones to keep dust from getting into the flour. So then what we say is whether that cloth was set aside or whether it was not, and we'll see soon what minamuchan means and when not, tomei give it up to the Eliezer. Would say still makabel tuma, the fact that you set it aside for one of these purposes, even though it's a very unimportant purpose, and even though it's not minamuchan, which we're going to explain soon what minamuchan is, Rabbi Eliezer would still say that's makabel tuma. Rabbi Yeshua, I'm a bein minamuchan, bein shalom minamuchan tor. Rabbi Yeshua says that no, whether it's minamuchan or whether not, as we're going to explain soon again what that means, Rabbi Yeshua would say it's not makabel tuma. It's not makabel tuma because according to him, only if it's used as a beged, or as we're going to say soon, that you showed, we're going to talk about soon what minamuchan and shalom minamuchan is. Basically, there's different degrees of how carefully you're keeping this thing around. So Rabbi Yeshua would say that Rabbi Yeshua would say that in most cases, as we're going to discuss soon, it's not makabel tuma. Rabbi Akiva, I mean, I'm mochan tuma, but shalom, I'm mochan tar. Rabbi Akiva takes a middle ground and says it depends. If it's mochan, then it's makabel tuma. If not, then not. Ve'er amar ula. Now, as an explanation of that Mishnah, we have to understand what's mochan. So ula says, ve'itema rabba bachana, or some say rabba bachana says, amar abrichanan, like this. a coal modem, everybody would agree, Zoko Ba'ashpa, that if you threw that piece of cloth in the garbage and later on you took it out of the garbage and are using and are going to use it for one of these purposes, so if you threw it in the garbage, divrei hakol tahor, then everybody would agree that it's tahor, it's not makabel tumah anymore, because you showed that you don't consider it important. And even though, let's say, you took it out afterwards and you use it as a pot holder, it still wouldn't be makabel tumah. Hinicha bekufsa, if you put it in a box, which therefore you showed by putting it in a box, you showed that you mean to keep it. It's something important to you. So therefore, divrei hakol tumah. So everybody, even Rabbi Yeshua, would agree that it's makabel tumah. What would be the machlokas? What if he hung it on a hook or he put it behind the door? And now, that's not showing as definitively as putting in a box that it's something important to you. But on the other hand, it's not showing as definitively as throwing it in the garbage that it's not important to you. So therefore, so now we have the machlokas. That's it. Rebel Yezer would take with you, Midaloi Zorkei Ba'ashva, since you didn't throw it in the garbage, Daitei Ilavei, that shows that you intend to use it in the future. Umai Korilei Shaloi Min HaMuchan, so why did you use the expression Shaloi Min HaMuchan? Because the Legabe Kufsa, La Muchanu, he would say, the ultimate Muchan would be if you put it in a box. Like this, anything less than putting it in a box, Rebel Yezer would call Shaloi Min HaMuchan. It's not really pre-prepared, because even you hung it on a hook, for example, it's still not really prepared. You put it on a hook, that doesn't really demonstrate that you intend to use it long-term. Nevertheless, Rebel Yezer would say, it doesn't matter, the fact that you didn't throw it in the garbage is good enough reason for us to consider it, that it's considered important to you and it's makabel tumah. Rabbi Yeshua would hold the other way around. Midaloi hinichle b'kufsa. On the contrary, you could say, since he did not put it in a box, only putting it in a box would be considered mochon. Anything less than that is not. If he didn't put it in a box, but totally bafle, then he shows by that he's being mevatele.
Excuse me. When you use a garment and you want to reuse it, you don't put it in a box. You put it on a hook, on a hanger. How can he comment? What?
No, for example, when you have a pot holder, it's very common to put a pot holder in a box or a drawer or something. Yeah. So Rabbi Yeshua would say,
a garment you're going to put in a box if you want to reuse it? A talis?
Yeah, but keep in mind, you're not using it over here as a garment. Here you're talking about a piece of cloth which you've adapted not using as a baguette. If you're using it as a baguette, if you're using it as a garment, no question it's a makabel tumah. The question is, here you're using it as a drain stopper or a pot holder or whatever. So therefore, so Rabbi Yeshua would say, the only way it's considered mochan would be if you put it in a box, where you're going to take it out from the box every time and you're going to use it. If you put it on a hook or something, then it would not be considered mochan. Anything less than a box, so that's the thing. My kori le mochan. So why does Rabbi Yeshua call it mochan when it's on a hook? Because relative to being thrown in the garbage, it is mochan, because you've shown more that it's important to you by putting it on a hook. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yeshua would say that because you didn't put it in a box, you didn't demonstrate definitively that it's important to you. Therefore, he says not makabel tumah.
Mm-hmm.
And Rabbi Akiva, meanwhile, would be taking a middle ground. He would say, okay, but you're talking about two different possibilities between the garbage and the box. We mentioned two possibilities, one where you put it on a hook and one where you put it behind the door. So Rabbi Akiva would say, deploy the mug with Savok Rabbi Eliezer. When you hung it on a hook, then he would agree with Rabbi Eliezer. Hanging it on a hook shows more that it's important to you than putting it in a box. I'm sorry, then putting it behind the door. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva would say, if it was in a box, then for sure, okay, everybody agrees with makabel tumah. If you hung it on a hook, Rabbi Akiva would say, I agree with Rabbi Eliezer. It's also still makabel tumah. But if you put it behind the door, Rabbi Akiva would hold like Rabbi Yeshua that putting it behind the door and, of course, putting it in the trash, everybody then it wouldn't be makabel tumah. So that's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. We're going to talk about in a second how that relates to his opinion in our Mishnah. But so far, that would be the machlokas, according to Rashi. Okay. Tostitus actually learns differently. Tostitus learns differently. The reason Tostitus learns that there, we're not distinguishing between, according to Rashi, what it is, so far, what we're saying is like this. According to Rashi, you have four things. You have garbage, going from least important to most important. You have garbage, you have behind the door, you have on a hook, and you have in a box. So according to Rashi, what the Gemara is saying is, in the first one, everybody would agree that's not Makabel Tumah. In the fourth one, everybody would agree that it is. The second and third would be the Machlokes, where Rabbi Eliezer would say both the second and third are Makabel Tumah, whether it's on the hook or behind the door. Rabbi Yeshua would say both those two are not Makabel Tumah. And Rabbi Akiva would take a middle ground. The second one behind the door is not Makabel Tumah, but the third one on the hook is. Tosfos learns differently. The Mukhan and She'enei Mukhan over here, we're distinguishing, according to all of them, between the hook and behind the door. What we're saying is that Rabbi Eliezer is saying that even though putting it behind the door is less Mukhan than putting it on a hook, nevertheless, I'm still saying that putting it behind the door is enough for it to be Makabel Tumah. Not like according to Rashi because it's more Mukhan than putting it in the garbage, but because even though it's less Mukhan than putting it in a box, it's even less Mukhan than putting it on a hook. Nevertheless, Rabbi Eliezer would still say it's Makabel Tumah. Rabbi Yeshua would say that, where Rabbi Yeshua would say that both of them are not Makabel Tumah, and Rabbi Akiva would say, so therefore, in other words, according to Tosfos, both Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are actually specifically arguing about the case of the hook and behind the door, and therefore Rabbi Akiva can take a middle ground, and therefore Rabbi Akiva can take a middle ground between them and distinguish between those two.
And say that
the hook, it would be Makabel Tumah, and behind the door, it would not. Okay. So then the Gemara points out, V'hodir bei Rabbi Akiva l'gabed Rabbi Yeshua. Now, in the end, what we're saying is Rabbi Akiva eventually changed his mind and accepted completely Rabbi Yeshua's opinion that even if it was on the hook, it would still not be Makabel Tumah anymore. Mimai, where do we see that? Where do we see that Rabbi Akiva changed his mind? Amar Rava Midikotani Tfila HaBegel. Because the Mishnah over here uses the expression of a wick made out of a piece of cloth, implying that it's still at the stage where it's still considered a beged. You haven't completely thrown it away, and you haven't even thrown it behind the door where then it wouldn't necessarily be considered a complete beged. So my iri to tell me tsilas ha beged. Why does it use the expression tsilas ha beged, which means a wick which is a beged? Listen, the Mishnah could have just said tsila shel beged. The Mishnah could have just said a wick made from a piece of cloth. Because usually that's what you do. As we learned earlier in the Perek, for example, they would take the old worn-out clothes of the Kohanim and they would rip off pieces of them and then make wicks out of them. It's not usual to use an entire beged as a wick. It's usually you tear off pieces of it. And the expression for that would be tsila shel beged. So why instead are you saying tsila ha beged, as if like it was a complete beged that you're making into a wick? That's the point. My tsilas habeged, da adayin beged hu. We're talking about it still is considered a full-fledged beged, and we're talking about therefore even if it's behind the door, and even if it's hanging on a hook. So even at any point where it can still be considered a beged. Meaning, even if it's as close as possible to not being a beged anymore. Meaning, even if it was anything other than in the box, even if it was on a hook, even if it was a behind the door, even so, we're still calling it a beged, the Adayan beged, who is still considered a beged, and still Rabbi Akiva says it's not Makabel Tumah, which means that he holds completely, like Rabbi Yeshua, that as long as you designated it for some purpose other than as an actual piece of clothing, and as long as you didn't actually put it in a box, anything short of that, it's not going to be Makabel Tumah anymore when you designate it for some lesser purpose, like in our Mishnah when you designate it as a wick. But therefore, so that would explain. So Rav Amnon is saying that would explain the Machlokes of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah regarding whether this wick is Makabel Truma or not, because Rabbi Eliezer would say the fact that you made it into a wick, the fact that you designated it as a wick is not enough to be, is not enough to take away its Truma from it unless you had also previously thrown it in the garbage. If you put it behind the door or on a hook or something and then took it off there and used it as a wick, then it would still be Makabel Truma. And Rabbi Akiva would hold like Rabbi Yeshua in the Mishnah and Kalim, who says that once you, that, that as long as you're not keeping it in a box, then it wouldn't be Makabel Truma anymore. So that's the box. So that's that. So in other words, it comes out in the end, we have two different explanations for each of the two machlokas in our Mishnah. We have the machlokas whether it's Makabel Truma or not. So that we had the beginning of the Gemara. The sum of the Gemara had said the reason is because the question is whether twisting it makes it no longer a beggar or not. Rabbi Eliezer, according to that, would say that no, and Rabbi Akiva would say that yes. And then we have now Rabbi Hamnuna's explanation that we're talking about with a piece less than 3x3 tefachim, and the question is whether designated in the wick, even without actually folding it to make one, is enough to make it not be Makabel Truma anymore. And then we had, as far as the question, whether you can light with it for Shabbos, that also we had two explanations. We had Rav Adar Bar Abba's explanation, because it's talking about an Erev Yom, it's talking about on Yom Tov, and the question is, and you can't use it according to the, if you can't use it, because you might not be able to use it because of Mukta. And we had Rabba's explanation that we're talking about because, in general, Rabbi Eliezer doesn't want you to be lighting with a wick that wasn't previously singed.
Okay. So two aspects of the machla case. One is Tuma, and the other one is...
No, so we have two different machlokes. One, whether it's Makabel Truma, and one, whether you can use it for Shabbos candles. So we're saying there's two explanations, there's two ways of explaining the aspect of machlokes as far as Truma, there's two ways of explaining it. And as far as the part of the machlokes about Shabbos candles, there's also two ways of explaining it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Next Mishnah. Mishnah says, Lo yikiv adam.
What's the halacha?
The halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. As usual, Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Eliezer, the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva. But as far as Tum of Atara, since we said in the Gemara over here that Rabbi Akiva ended up accepting Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, then the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua in the case of the piece less than 3x3 tefachim, that unless you put it in a box, it's not Makabel Tumah anymore, if you're using it for lesser purposes, like we said, as a bath stuff or whatever. And as far as using it for Shabbos candles, we said that both explanations are valid. You have Rav Adar Bar Abba's explanation that if we say no, that is also on Yom Tov, which in fact the halacha is that it is, then you would not then. We would say that, so then we would say that according to Rabbi Eliezer, you wouldn't be able to light with it on Yom Tov. According to Rabbi Akiva, you could, because once you twisted it, then it's no longer considered, that once you twisted it before Yom Tov, then it's no longer a Keli, and then when you light it on Yom Tov, then it's only a Shever Keli already, and you're allowed to. And also, you would have Rabbi's point that Rabbi Akiva doesn't care if you don't singe the wick before Shabbos, where even though technically Tosfos says you shouldn't have to, nevertheless, the minhag is that we do.
But coming back to the tumah, something less than three etzbaos, is it three tfachim we said, or three etzbaos?
Three tfachim we're talking about. If it's more than
three tfachim,
if it's more than three tfachim, it doesn't matter what purpose, and if it's less than 3x3 etzbaos, then it also doesn't matter. We're talking about between 3x3 etzbaos and 3x3 tfachim.
And between the three tfachim and three etzbaos, what's the halacha?
So the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua, if you're not using it as a piece of cloth, if you're not using it as clothing, or the pack for clothing or something, if you're using it, for example, for a bath, for a drain stop or whatever, then it's not, then unless you put it in a box, it's not Makabel Truma.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that I'm unpacking it. Okay. Mishnah says, Lo yikiv adam shveferet shobeisa. A person is not allowed to, before Shabbos, make a hole in an eggshell, v'yimal'ena shemen, and then he's going to fill up the eggshell with oil, v'yitnena al-pi'aner, and put it above the lamp, b'shvil sh'tei min ha-kefeh, so that way, actually, I'm sorry, as far as the previous machlokas, actually, this is one of the cases, where the Rambam passed like Rabbi Eliezer. I'm not sure why, actually. Usually the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, is like Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Akiva against Rabbi Eliezer, but here the Rambam actually passed things like Rabbi Eliezer. So therefore, unless you threw it in the garbage, then it is Makabel Truma. All right, anyway, returning to our Mishnah. Well, you give Adam Schiff.
Why is he basketing like Rabbi Eliezer?
I don't know why. I just looked it up now. I found that he does. I don't know the reason why. I'd have to look in the notes of Caleb, I guess. But we'll deal with that later. We'll try to anyway. All right, let's go on. So the Mishnah says, well, Yikov Adam Shekredes Shabbat. A person is not allowed to make a hole in an eggshell. The Malena Shemen, and then he fills up that eggshell with oil. The Nena Pianer, and puts it on top of the lamp. The Shvil Shetayman Akethes, in order that oil would drip out from the eggshell into the lamp. In other words, this way it'll be like an extra reservoir of oil. Now, why would you do that? Why would you just fill up the lamp? There's an interesting thing. The Tashbit says that even in his times, people would do similar, somewhat, he was one of the Rishonim, he mentions people would do somewhat similar things. In his times also, where the idea was, let's say, for example, you want to sit and learn later than usual, you want to sit up and learn all night or a major part of the night or whatever, a regular lamp doesn't have enough, the reservoir of it is not big enough to provide enough oil for it to last all night. So you would do something like that. You'd create a second reservoir in order, you'd create a second reservoir in order to have extra oil. So that way it'll burn longer than usual. And that way, let's say you can stay up and learn later. So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbat because you may come to use oil from that eggshell, and that would be also, you're not allowed to, we learned earlier in the parak, you're not allowed to take oil out of a lamp on Shabbos. It would be an issur of mechaba. You actually have a machlokas rishonim, what exactly the issue is. Is it Tosfos? And Tosfos in other places talks about that once you take out, in general, they say that why can't you take out oil from a lamp on Shabbos? It's not just that later on it's going to go out sooner. It's right now you're weakening the flame. So the Rosh asks on that, what do you mean? In our Mishnah, you're not weakening the flame at all because the new reservoir of oil is nowhere near the flame. And yet we say that it's also. So the Rosh learns that it's because you're causing it, that it's going to go out earlier. It's going to go out earlier. And then, okay, the Rambam gives a third reason, that it's also on the ground of Muktzah. Okay.
Regardless, aside the Muktzah, but it depends on the length of the wick. On a short wick...
Stop a second.
It could weaken the flame.
No, the wick is not touching the extra reservoir over here. The extra reservoir over here, this eggshell, is hanging above the lamp. It's not touching the wick at all. So therefore, so again, according to the Tosfos, in general, the reason you're not allowed to take oil out of a lamp is because you're weakening the flame. And so you have a chronim who explain over here. You have a chronim over here who explain that maybe what it is Tosfos would say that because it's constantly that the question is, it's not just that you might take some of the oil out, you might remove the whole eggshell, and therefore you're stopping the dripping right away, and therefore you're actually weakening the flame right then and there. But anyway, according to the Rosh, that's not an issue. According to the Rosh, rather, the issue is that you're causing it, that eventually it's going to go out sooner. And according to the Rambam, it's a matter of Moksa. All right, let's go on. The Afilu Hishalchera. That applies not only if it was an eggshell, but even if it was an earthenware container, which, as the Gemara is going to point out, an earthenware container, the oil in it gets much dirtier, as opposed to an eggshell where the inside of it, once you wash it out, is clean. Nevertheless, even then it would be osur. Rav Yehuda master, Rav Yehuda is master in both cases, as we'll see in the Gemara. Avol, but, continues the Mishnah, im chibra hayotze mitzchila, if to begin with when the potter made the lamp, he added this extra reservoir above it to drip into it, so to begin with it was allowed, mutter, then it's allowed, with neshu kli echad, because then it's all one keli. And the same way as you're allowed to have the lamp as a whole burning on Shabbos, and we're not concerned you're going to take oil out of it because you know it's off limits on Shabbos. The same way, if it's all made to begin with as one big thing where it was attached to begin with, then it's mutter because then it's one keli and you're not going to take from it. Another case, the Mishnah says, lo yimala adam ka'ara shel shemen. A person is also not allowed to fill up a dish full of oil before Shabbos, v'yitnena b'tzadaner, and put it next to the lamp, v'yitin roish ha'psila b'socha, and put the other end of the wick into it. In other words, you have to imagine, you have the lamp itself, you have one end of the wick sticks out of the lamp, and that's the end that burns. Normally you have the whole rest of the wick is inside the lamp, and it draws oil from it. In this case, let's say there's another hole at the other end of the lamp, So you have the wick is going in one end and out the other, and then you have the other end of the wick is in another bowl of oil. So that way, again, like you have an extra reservoir of oil for it to get from. So it's going to take. So it's going to draw up oil from both of them. Just like in the other one, it's dripping in, and you have a reservoir of oil. So here also, you have the wick itself is taking from both, from the lamp, from the reservoir that's inside the lamp, as well as from this extra bowl. You're not allowed to do that. The Shvil Shatei Shabbos, and you would do that in order that it would draw from the extra bowl, again, because of the problem that you might take oil from the bowl on Shabbos. And again, Rabbi Yehuda Matir, again, Rabbi Yehuda Alai. Okay, so the Gemara starts off with Tzvicha. Now, why do we need three cases in our Mishnah? One where you have an eggshell hanging above it, one where you have an earthenware container hanging above it, and one where you have a bowl nearby. By the way, I should mention an interesting thing. So the Maharil brings an interesting possibility that maybe in our Mishnah it's not shreferes shel beitza, meaning an eggshell, but rather shreferes shel bitza, which means a tube that grows in the swamps, meaning like a bamboo tube or something. Same idea. In other words, you make a hole in it and you fill it up with oil so it'll drip into the land. Anyway, the point is, so we have three cases. We have the eggshell or the bamboo. We have the earthenware, both of which are hanging above the lamp. And then you have a bowl nearby. Why do we need to mention in all three cases that the Chachamim say it's Osir and Rabbi Yehuda says it's Mutter? So the Mutter says we need all three of them. What's if we only mention the case of the eggshell or the bamboo, Shofar Shobitz or whatever, then you would say, Bahok Ami Rabbanon. You know why the Rabbanon don't allow it, the Kivin Delay Isa? Because after all, the container itself is not dirty. The oil that's in the eggshell or the bamboo stays very clean. So you have a real concern that he might end up using some of that oil on Shabbos. And as we said, that's Osir. But if the reservoir, if the thing that's hanging up there is made out of earthenware, demi'isa, where when you put oil in earthenware, it becomes disgusting because you have little bits of the earthenware crumble off into it or whatever. Maybe they would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that there's no problem with doing that because there's less of a possibility that he's going to take any of that oil out on Shabbos because it's dirty anyway. The Iyash in and Shocheres, because that's just what would you take out oil for? You take out oil, let's say, if you want it for salad dressing or something. You're not going to take oil out of the earthenware container over there for salad dressing, let's say, because it would be dirty. But the Iyash in and Shocheres, on the other hand, if we only mention the case involving the earthenware one, you would say, Bahaka Amr Rabbi Yehuda. Fine, the Rabbi Yehuda allowed it because, as we said, since it's dirty, there's very little possibility that he's going to take any out. But in the first case involving the eggshell or the bamboo, maybe he would agree with the Rabbanon. We should be gozer then that we shouldn't allow him to take out, that we shouldn't allow him to do that before Shabbos because he might take some out on Shabbos. So far, that's why we need the first two machlokes in. And then the Iyashmin and Hanach Pauti, if we only had those first two, you would say Bahani Ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda. You know why Rabbi Yehuda would allow it. In those two cases, Mishum Delay Mishpach. Because after all, the bowl, the reservoir is not completely separate from the lamp. It's hanging directly over it. It's not even hanging directly over. It's like you have, we talked about the other day, how the lamps were shaped in those days, where like you had a big hole on the top with a cover above it, which is where you put in the oil. So like this, you have this new reservoir is right above it. It's right above it. So it's not separate. So you would say that therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would allow it because there, even if it's not attached, but it's right on top of it, and therefore you're going to stay away from it. Just like you're going to stay away from taking anything from the lamp, you'd stay away from taking anything that's right above it. Abu Ka'ara de Mipsika, but when it comes to a separate bowl of oil, which is completely separate, it's not at all near the lamp, Ema Modulahu the Rabbanon, maybe he would agree with the Rabbanon that it should be Osir. The Iyashmin and Bahi, and if we said it only in that case of the bowl, then you would say the other way around, Bahi Kami Rabbanon, only with the bowl the Chachamim not allow it. Abba Bahani Tauti, but in the previous two cases where it's directly above the lamp and even touching it maybe, Ema Modula Rabbi Yehuda, maybe they would agree with Rabbi Yehuda that it should be Mutter, Tzvicha, and therefore we need all three cases to tell us that they actually argue in all three of them.
Rabbi, why would if the Rabbanim are arguing against the two tops, which are right directly part of the lamp, why would they say yes to the bowl on the bottom, which is easy to get
they
to.
They wouldn't. That's the thing. Once we know that Rabbanan say it's also on top, for sure they say it's also in the bowl. The point is, even Rabbi Yehuda even allows it in the
case. Oh, he might agree. Okay.
Yeah.
He might agree.
You would think that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Rabbanan, with the bowl, it shouldn't be also. There's more of a possibility. He's going to use from it. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter. You actually have, by the way, it's interesting, the Rambam has a different explanation of it in Pirush HaMishnayos, and the Tosfos Yom Tov explains that the Rambam apparently had a different girsa over here, not the mitzvah, but rather the mitzvah, which means that it is connected. Namely, in other words, on the other hand, you have a certain advantage on Rav Moshe. You were mentioning a minute ago about the risk, but when you get down to it, in the case of the eggshell or the earthenware that's hanging above, that's right above that's right above the lamp, the wick is not touching it at all. On the other hand, the fact is, here with the bowl, the wick is touching them and connecting them. So maybe, therefore, you would have more reason to say, and this also answers what you're saying, Ellie, that according to the Rambam, that Rabbanan maybe would have more reason to allow it, because you have an obvious thing that's holding them together. You have the wick. It's right in there. You're going to look and you're going to say, wait a minute, I can't take oil from this bowl on Shabbos. There's a wick in it. It's obviously part of the lamp. As opposed to the other two cases where you don't have it actually, you don't have the wick actually touching it, and therefore maybe the chachamim. But then we're saying that no, the chachamim after it in all three cases, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutter in all three cases.
It's interesting that Rabbi Yehuda is
okay,
naked in one case.
On this. Fine, one has nothing to do with it. Let's go on. We said Rabbi Yehuda is machmer on mukhtan, he's naked on this. Yeah, that one has nothing to do with the other. Okay. On the other, then we said in the Mishnah, the imchibra hayot mitchila mutter v'chola, that if the potter attached this extra thing to the lamp in the first place, then it would be mutter. The Tana, we learn in a Braisa, imchibra b'sidur v'chausis mutter. If anybody attached it, meaning even the Balabais himself before Shabbos attached it using lime or using crushed earthenware, which they would make into a sort of paste, mutter, then it would be mutter. What do you mean? Non-yotitznan. The Mishnah said only if the potter attached it. What do you mean that if you yourself attached it at home, then it would be mutter? The answer is my yotir kein yotir. It means it has to be attached firmly. It has to be solidly attached. Then it doesn't matter whether the potter did it to begin with or whether you did it at home using glue or whatever that you have at home. As long as it's solidly attached, then it would be mutter to do that before Shabbos, because then again it's one big keli, and therefore the chachamim now don't have to be concerned that you're going to take any of it and use it. Okay. Now, where does Rabbi Yehuda get his opinion from? Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Pam achas Shabbosinu ba'aliyas beis Nitzer b'Lud. One time we spent Shabbos in the second floor of the house of Nitzer in Lud. Nitzer was the person's name. The Chachamim sometimes used it as a place where they gathered together. We find also famously where they decided the halacha that Yehorek Val Yaver is also in aliyas beis Nitzer. Anyway. So Rabbi Yehuda says they actually did that. They brought us an eggshell or bamboo stick, whatever. We filled it up with oil. We made a hole in it. We put it above the lamp. So this way we would have extra. This way we'd have light for a few extra hours on Friday night to be able to learn Torah. The Hoyashem Reb Taufin was Canaan. Reb Taufin and the others Canaan were there. The Loy Amru Lanu Dabur, and they didn't say anything to us. So obviously it must be mutter. Amru Lord, the Chachamim said to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham Raya, are you bringing a proof from there? Shiny based Nitzah, this risen hain. It's different with the family of Nitzah. They were very, very careful. Again, we say that they used their house regularly as a headquarters for the Chachamim, so they're extra careful with such people. We don't have to be concerned that they're going to be taking oil from the lamp on Shabbos, but otherwise not. Okay. Another example of a similar case where we have, where we have where somebody was doing something and one of the chachamim has to point out that it's wrong. So like Gemara tells, Oven Sipora, Oven from Sipori, his name was Oven, he lived in the city of Sipori, Gora Sasla, he one time on Shabbat dragged a bench, the Elisa de Shisha, in a second floor which had a marble floor, in front of Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar. Now, if you drag a bench on a wooden, on a dirt floor, you may dig up dirt. If you're doing it on a marble floor, there's no concern, you're going to dig up anything. But Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar says to Ovid, if I am quiet to you, when you and don't protest when you're doing this, the way those Chachamim did not say anything in Rabbi Yehuda's story, Nafik Minei Churva, there's going to come a big problem from that, because other people are going to think that such a thing is allowed, even on a dirt floor. And you should know, it's not. Zera Elisa de Shisha Otu Elisa de Alma. We have to make a Zera. You're not allowed to do that even on a marble floor, because you may come to do it on a dirt floor. Tosfos points out, it's one thing if all the houses in town have marble or stone or whatever floors, then fine, maybe you don't have to make a Zera. But when you have some houses in the city have marble floors and some have dirt floors and different kinds, then you have to make a Zera because one is easily confused with the other. So the reason why we bring that in is because it's related to the story of Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda, the Taif and the Chachamim didn't say anything when Rabbi Yehuda set up that thing with the reservoir. So Rabbi Yehuda therefore thought it's completely mutter, and the Chachamim tell him only in the household of Mitzvah. So in the same thing over here, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Elazar says, don't think it's mutter because your floor is not dirt, and therefore there's no problem with digging up dirt. You should know it's also because it may be confused. I'm going to protest in order that people realize in the future that it's also. Another example, the Gemara says, Reish Knishta de Basra, the head of the shul of Basra, which that Basra is the name of a city, Rashi describes that this person was responsible for everything that takes place in the shul. He's in charge of deciding who gets haftarah, when people can come in and when they can leave, where everybody should sit, etc. So he's basically the shamash, or maybe he's hired in the shamash, maybe he's like the shul president, whatever. Gora Sassala, one time he dragged the bench, on a dirt floor, La'elamit of Yirmi Araba, in front of Rabbi Yirmi Araba. So Amalei, so Rabbi Yirmi Araba says to him, Kaman, who are you following when you're doing that? Kedab Shimon. Apparently you're following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Whereas we learned before, you have the question of actually I don't think we talked about this before, but you have the question of Dabar She'enim Eskaven. You do a malacha, and inadvertently you do something on Shabbos or on Yom Tov, it comes up in other cases in halacha as well, but you do something, and by the way, something else may happen, which is also. It's called Dabar She'enim Eskaven. So Rabbi Yehuda, this is another one of the cases where Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon argue. Rabbi Yehuda holds Dabar She'enim Eskaven is also. Rabbi Shimon holds is mutter. So therefore, in our case over here, you drag a bench, you may dig up dirt, you don't intend to dig up dirt, we're not talking about with Sikhlesha, as we're going to discuss soon in the Gemara. So Rabbi Yehuda says it's also, Rabbi Shimon says it's mutter, apparently says Rabbi Yirmi Araba to the shul president, or whatever it is, who's dragging around a bench, apparently you hold like Rabbi Shimon. The problem with that is, you know what Rav Shimon is talking about when he says it's mutter is only when you're talking about a large bench. There's no other way of moving it other than to drag it. So therefore, Rav Shimon says, okay, you have no choice. Go ahead and drag it, because otherwise you're not going to be able to have it in place at all. Did Rav Shimon ever say such a thing when it comes to a smaller bench, which you could easily just pick it up and carry it? And that way you don't have the possibility of doing a malacha at all. However, the Gemara says, a pliga de Ula. This statement of Rabbi Yirmi Araba disagrees with what Ula says. The Amma Ula, because Ula says it's the other way around. Machlokas diktanim. The machlokas is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is about small benches, where Rabbi Shimon allows it, because the fact is, it's Dabar She'enim Eskaven. Avol begdolim de'ra'akol mutter. But a large bench, as long as, Tosfos says, as long as it's not large enough, to actually for sure make a groove, because then it would be also a stick ratio. But if it's large enough, when it's large, that would be the machlokes. Rabbi Yehuda would say it's large, you can't move it except by dragging it. Tough luck. You can't move it. And Rabbi Shimon would say it's allowed. But whereas Ula would say, so Ula says, that was Rabbi Yirmi Araba's explanation. Ula says the other way around, if it's a small one where you have a choice, carry it or drag it, then Rabbi Shimon says drag it if you want to. Rabbi Yehuda says don't. But if it's a big one, then everybody would agree, says Ula, that it would be mutter because you have no other way to move it. Okay, so in other words, so we have two different understandings of the machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. But now the question is like this. Must have Rabbi Yosef says I have a contradiction. We have another example of Dovah Sheamus Gavin when it comes to the Dinim of Shatnam. You have a Mishnah that says like this. I'm skipping a few lines. Sorry, Moshe Rabbeinu. Reb Shimon Omer Gor Oda Mitzah Kista V'Safsol. We learn in a Braisa. Reb Shimon says a person is allowed to drag a bed or chair or bench over Vadchol Yiskavin Lachas Chorit as long as he doesn't mean to make a groove in the ground. So the problem with that is we mentioned large and small furniture. We have a bed which is large, we have a chair which is small, and we have a bench which is in between. So katonic dolim or katonic tanim, we're mentioning big furniture, we're mentioning small furniture, kasha l'tavayus. And now it's a problem on both of them. How is either of Yirmiya Rabba or Ola explaining it? So the answer is Ola matayus l'tamei, but Yirmiya Rabba matayus l'tamei. Each one can explain the braisa the way he would. Ula matayus l'tamei mita drumya dekise. He would say the kind of bed we're talking about is a small bed. You have small beds, just like you have chairs, which are small. So we're talking about a small one. There, Reb Yehuda wouldn't allow it because you have a choice. Just pick it up instead. Reb Shimon would allow it. But if it was big, if it was in fact a big bed, then Ula would say everybody would agree it's allowed. Reb Yirmiya Rabba would explain it according to his shita. Tisa, drumya demitza, the other way around. We're talking about a very large chair, which is similar to a bed. But if it was a small piece, Then Rabbi Yirmiya Rabba would say, everybody would say it also, you could just pick it up. Mosiv Rabba. So Rabba says, okay, but I have another contradiction. You're telling about this matter of Dovah Sheinim Eskavim. You have a case involving Shatnez. Now, we know you're not allowed to wear Shatnez, but you have a Mishnah that says, people who are selling clothes, and they may be selling Shatnez clothes as well, because you're allowed to have Hanah from Shatnez, you're just not allowed to wear it. They're allowed to sell it the normal way that they sell it, which is usually they wear the clothing in order to show what it looks like on a person. So they're allowed to, because you're not wearing it for the sake of wearing it. You're not wearing it in order to have Hanah. As long as during the summertime you're not intending to enjoy the fact that it's helping keeping you cool from the, it's helping keeping the heat away from your body, or in the winter that it's keeping the rain or the cold away from you, because that would be also, then you actually, your body is having hanach and shatnez, but otherwise it would be mutter. Tosfos says, it's talking about it's not sick reishit, for example, he's wearing other clothes, so he already has other clothes that are helping protect him from the heat or the cold. Now there's just the extra clothes on top of them. The Ritva gives a different explanation, which is that when he's not actually wearing them, he just has them slung over his shoulders. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Vasnuin, but the extra careful people, the people who want to avoid that anybody should be saying about them, look, this person is not following the halacha, Machshivan, Mamakalacharei, and they hold the clothes on a stick behind them. So that way it's not touching their body at all. So the question is, now over here, everybody could be doing like a snuin. Everybody who's selling clothes like that, they don't have to wear them. They could put that on a stick behind them. So therefore, it's the equivalent of a small chair or whatever. And yet Reb Shimon, who the Pashkut has to be the Tana of our Mishnah, because according to Reb Yehuda, it would be also, because Dovah Sheinim Eskavin, he would say he's also, and yet Reb Shimon is allowing it l'chila. So therefore, how can you say that Reb Shimon is not allowing it in the case of a small one, because he says, pick it up. In this case, it should be the equivalent of a small one, because Reb Shimon should just tell you, don't wear the kelayim, just put it on a stick behind you, like the way the snuim do. Tiyuvta de Reb Yirmiya Rabba, that's a clear contradiction against Reb Yirmiya Rabba. He writes the Gemara, says, Tiyuvta, that's it, it's a contradiction against him, so therefore, that's it. We can't accept his understanding of the machlokas. We have to use Ola's understanding of it, which is, now, if it's a small one, Reb Shimon would allow it. Reb Yehuda would not, because Reb Yehuda would say, pick it up. Reb Shimon says, it doesn't matter. If you want to drag it, you could. But if it's a larger one, then both of them would say it's mutter. Again, as long as it's not large enough, that it's definitely going to dig up the ground, because then they would both agree it's also because it's sick ratio.
How could you drag a heavy, very heavy, big bench, and it's not going to dig up stuff on the ground?
Well, it depends what kind of dirt, depends what kind of dirt ground it's on, right? Depends whether it's salt,
if it's cement, it's cement, it won't. But if cement is one thing, but dirt is dirt.
What?
So cement, I understand, but dirt is dirt. Dirt will always make a mark.
It depends how heavy it is. It could be heavy enough. that you can't lift it up, but not so heavy that necessarily it's going to dig up the dirt. It might not.
So why can't we say more simply, well, let two people do it? What's the big deal that one person cannot?
First of all, let's say you don't have two people available. Let's say you don't have two people available.
Then you cannot move it. That's it.
According to the Yemir Rabba's way, that was so. But according to Ula's way, we're saying that again, it would be machloikas of Yehuda and Reb Shimon whether Dov Hashem is kapin is mutter. In general, what is the halacha as far as Dov Hashem is kapin? In the case of Kilayim over here, we do paskin like Reb Shimon that we say that it's mutter. In the case of Shabbos, I think we also say that Dov Hashem is kapin is mutter. So therefore, yeah, the halacha would be, yeah, we mentioned earlier in the parak, there were three things where Rabba followed Reb Shimon's opinion, and this was one of them, that he says that you're allowed to drag. So that's the halacha. You are allowed to drag things around on dirt on Shabbos as long as they're not definitely going to dig up dirt. If it's sick reisha and it's not allowed, otherwise it's dov hashem miskaven and it's allowed. Obviously, if you have more people available and you have enough people to pick it up and help collect it, then obviously that would be better, but you're not required to do that, in other words.
So what's the depth of the groove that's allowed and not allowed?
Any depth of pashtus, I don't know. I mean, anything that you would see. And then, I mean, halacha obviously doesn't concern itself with things you don't see. So if it just moves microscopic molecules of dirt, that wouldn't matter. We're talking about a groove that you would notice, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay, everyone. So
thank you.
Tomorrow,
you
yeah.
What time tomorrow?
The usual.